Hey everyone, Chad here, and welcome to another edition of the Chad Shipley Show, where I bring you interesting, insightful, and entertaining content or people. My guest today is truly, truly special. His name is Ed Meyer, and he is the exact reason I love doing this show. He is the founder and CEO of Tri-State Furniture and has found lots of success, as most would define it. But that's just one of the many, many reasons I wanted Ed to come onto the show. I just find something so interesting about this guy, and I knew that if he were to come on, it would be a spectacular conversation. To get into a backdrop, I've known him for the last 5 years as I've had the really great fortune of serving on the Board of Trustees at the Bradley Center with Ed. And despite all of his success in business, what really stands out is how much this guy cares about helping and giving back to people in need. So I thought, I'm just going to throw it out there, see if he'll come onto the show. And sure enough, he said yes. I was so humbled. And if I'm being honest, I was really nervous for this one. I wasn't sure if we would be able to open up the conversation in a way that would allow us to go deep and really illustrate the kind of person Ed is. However, it was everything I could have hoped for. He is as raw and as real as it comes. His character shines through and through. And it really comes out in the entire discussion. I actually found myself thinking, I'm so lucky to be able to have these kind of people in my life. I'm even luckier to have the great privilege of sitting down and sharing such a meaningful conversation. It really is why I love doing the show. I don't do it often, but when I have the chance to have people like Ed come in and have these kind of conversations, it lights me up. Okay, quick summary. We get into the power of mentors in his life. We get into him looking for food in garbage cans as a kid. He talks a little bit about that. We talk a lot about underprivileged and underserved children and how he's really working to bring change specifically to certain areas where there are a lot of underprivileged and underserved children. We talk about the children of the Bradley Center, why they matter to Ed so much. We get into how he started Tri-State Furniture and what it means to treat his employees the right way. There's a lot of good leadership insights that come out of that section of the podcast. We get into alcohol and drug abuse, an area that I even open up a little bit on. We dive into anxiety and depression and why these things matter so deeply to him. We talk about his upcoming book and why it's so important to him to help as many people as he can with his book. And we really just have a genuine and real conversation that is truly awesome. Ed checks all the boxes on what being an awesome and impactful person really is. It's people like him who bring love to the world in a very impactful way, because it's people like him who truly care about helping others. To you, Ed, it was an absolute honor having you on the show. I can't thank you enough for taking the time out of your very busy day. I will forever be a fan of you, a supporter of you, and continue to follow all that you do. Without further ado, I bring you the amazing Ed Meyer.
Yeah. Check, baby, check.
Check. Cool. All right. We're live. Ed, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you, Chad. Appreciate being here.
Definitely. Well, I've been wanting to have you on for a long time, and there's a lot of reasons to that. We'll get into those. But I'm going to start with, well, I'll just say this. I think you're probably one of the most successful people I've ever met, and we'll define success. And I think that you're one of the most caring people I've ever met, and I'll get into a little bit of the why there. But I'm going to bounce around a little bit, and I want to start with a quote that I saw a while back. It impacted me, and I'd like to have you dive into it a little bit. So the quote was, be the person that you needed when you were younger. And that's been something I've thought about for a long time. And I just want to start with that. So do you have a person, or do you have a type of person that you would have found helpful to have younger in your life? And do you aspire to be that person or have those kind of character traits now?
Well, I got to tell you, I'm fortunate because over time, as a young kid growing up, actually, and then continuing to grow through my teenage years and my adult years, I was lucky to have, I don't know why, but people took a liking to me and they became mentors. You know, I had a couple really strong mentors that I have, that I use to this day, philosophies and how they handled and took care of people. So I could say a little bit backwards as that I was lucky and fortunate to have someone, but they were the ones that where I become now. Like, they're, you know, I've learned a lot from them. Giving back is so important, but it's not just giving back money. It's giving back anything and everything you can do to help someone else strive to be better, whatever it is, helping someone off of drugs or alcohol, or giving some people money for food. And that's always been important to me, and it's so important to me even more now. So, you know, eating out of a garbage can to having a mentor who taught you everything about business, you know, really inspired me to play that forward.
Yeah.
So that's what I want to be now. I actually look for people to mentor instead of they look for me. I like to listen. My whole education is based on listening, watching people. I'm not a highly educated guy, but I believe I'm very smart. Based on watching, listening, that's my education. And yeah, that's what I want to do the rest of my life. Now my business is successful enough to where I can step back a little bit and help more people. So,
can we go back to one of the first big mentors in your life? Like, who was that? Take us back to that time. How old were you?
I was 14, and his name was Jim Rorick. It's now called Rorick Automotive, but it was Rorick Cadillac Toyota, and he was on West Liberty Avenue. And here's a guy who was very wealthy, but he also cared about people. He didn't have to, but he did. I mean, you can see it in him. And I was walking up and down the street every day, and he's like, "Hey, let me ask you a question." I'm like, "Yes." He goes, "Where do you go every day?" I said, "Nowhere. I'm just looking for food." He goes, "You don't have a job, no money?" I'm like, "No." He goes, "What do you do now?" "You work for me." And, you know, he took me in, and he, for some reason, and, you know, I was always a hard worker. I'll give you 8 hours. I'll actually give you 10 hours in an 8-hour day. You know, he just seen that, and he didn't have to do anything else. He took me all the way through that whole dealership of every job. I pretty much did everything there. I was selling cars, and 2 weeks before he died of cancer, he came down in his wheelchair and said, he came down to visit the dealership and said, he was proud of me, and I will never forget that. That's something I'll never forget.
Yeah.
And he didn't have to do any of that. You know, there was nothing, no incentive for him. But that's what I look for, people that, you know, you can pull strengths out of. I have a lot of weaknesses too, but the strengths are important to me, you know.
Yeah. Well, I think there's a lot of things that are really meaningful in everything you just said that we can unpack. But just to really set the stage, so because I don't know much of your history at all, right? Mm-hmm. I know some of the anecdotal things that you've said in some of the meetings we've been in together, and we're on the board of trustees at the Bradley Center together, and I know that you know, you've given a little bit of a backdrop into why you care and why these kids matter to you so much, but not very much detail at all. So when you're walking back and forth looking for food, are you homeless at the time? Are you just in a bad family situation? Are you, like, what's going on in your world? Are you involved with the wrong kids, or are you just a kid that's kind of like to himself and just trying to make ends meet?
Well, I wasn't with the wrong kids. I still have friends that were from kindergarten. There's about 5 of us. Yeah. You know, my mom passed away not so long ago, and I have a book coming out, and it'll be in the book. But there are some things that happened in my childhood that I'm very deflective of things. I hide. When I say I hide, if something's going wrong in my personal life, I kind of need time away from people. I push away, go to my safe place, which is kind of odd for a 59-year-old, but I still have that mechanism that causes me to shut down.
Yeah.
Like, when I shut down from everybody. You know, it was a rough life, didn't have a lot of food. Some things happened, you know, and that, you know, again, the next year I'll tell you more about my mom just passing away. I'm not going to really elaborate on that, but, you know, that's what made me stronger and hardworking to get out of that environment. Right. And yeah, that's what I was doing up and down, just, you know, kind of living wherever. And yeah.
Well, it's a powerful story. I remember listening to Tony Robbins talk a little bit about his early days, and you know, they were just starving at Thanksgiving, and some guy showed up with a turkey at their door, and he didn't understand why. And just that person that was willing to like help them when they were in need kind of triggered something in him, where that's, I mean, he does Feeding Across America now, where he does meals upon meals every year. And you know, it's kind of the same thing with, you said his name was Jim, right?
Jim Roark.
He kind of pulled you aside. So you get into the automobile industry then, right? And you start learning all the aspects of the job, and you start in sales. Do you stay in that profession for a long time, or?
Well, I went from, they call them lot jockeys or car jockeys. I went from that to, you know, anything I did at that dealership. But then as I was getting older, he moved me into certain service writer, writing estimates for the body shop, and working in a parts department, and then finally into sales. You know, the things I've learned from that is people will take, they'll take notice. And that's what I tell people, you know, let someone take note. There are still people around, not you know, not a lot, but there's still people around to take notice. I'm one of those people, you know, if I can help. But yeah, I did so much through there, and I worked there. And I got to tell you, when he died, I was there maybe another 6 months. I didn't want to be there anymore. Yeah. The atmosphere changed, philosophies changed, whether, you know, customers and employees are important. You know, that's my top ones, employees, because if your customer is important, you have to be, the employee has to be important first. Yeah. I mean, you're not going to get good service, and if you don't treat people the way they should be treated. And, you know, it went away. I just didn't want to be there anymore. Like, yeah. I was only there to prove to, if you want to call him, he wasn't my dad, but if you're like, you know how you're trying to prove to somebody that, thank you for taking an interest, I'm going to make sure that I don't let you down. Yeah. When he was gone, it was like, I didn't have that want to be there. So, yeah.
I think that's really important what you just said, because I'm a big believer in that philosophy. As a leader in an organization, or as a business owner, the most important customer to you is actually the people that are doing the work for you or for the business, right? Because if you treat them well, they're going to inevitably treat the customer well. And that's how you create a really awesome culture. I was actually just reading, it's not about the coffee, which was the Howard that they brought into Starbucks. And he really had that kind of thought process. So it was not about necessarily the service. It was about creating a culture of really happy people, which is, I always thought it was the coffee when you go to Starbucks, because everyone's smiling and really happy. But I think a lot of the culture that they created was just around, it's so much about like the employee. So let's jump forward then a little bit. So you leave there, and then what's the next thing?
Well, when I leave there, I, you know, kind of, I didn't know what to do in my life. I went to Robert Morris for a few years, played baseball there, but I had no education. I took another job with a company that was in the corrugated fiberboard, you know, AKA cardboard manufacturer, big all over the world, actually. And I worked there for a little while, and they tried to move me up to management. I decided not to work there, and I ended up in Office Furniture World, just taking a delivery installation job for a small, very small office furniture company. And it just went from there. I found my passion. Like, wow, I really found something that I really want to do the rest of my life. And it was in that quick moment, like between jobs. Like, I didn't want to be on unemployment, so I took the job closer to my house. I had young kids. It really wasn't making any money. Living not even paycheck to paycheck, even worse than that, because I had to take odd jobs. So I worked a few jobs, maybe three, you know, during the week. But I just remember, like, that, and I remember telling my wife at the time, I think I found something that I think I can, you know, really work into a career.
Yeah. Was it the the industry? Was it the furniture industry that you really liked, or was it the specific job role?
No, it was the industry. So there's two different sides of our industry. One could be you're just selling all new furniture, and you're like a contract furniture dealer. This industry really, the remanufactured, pre-owned, liquidating, that's the one that really caught me, because it's the art of, kind of going out to a flea market and finding something that you don't pay a lot of money for, and you can make a lot of money back and employ a lot of people. And it was one of those things like, wow, man, this is great. I can, take this furniture out that was going to go to a landfill, and I can, maybe refurbish it or reupholster or repaint or refinish. And we can, it has use for small businesses that don't have a big budget. Yeah. And so, as you grow and learn, you learn more about the business. I mean, you only learn by mistakes or, watching people. I was fortunate enough to have people in the industry grab me early and show me things that they don't let anybody else into.
Yeah.
So I've always had that way that people want to be around me and show me things, and it always made me feel special,
Yeah, I think on that point, from a performance perspective, I talk a lot about this when I do like leadership workshops. So in the corporate world specifically, there's a lot of talk around subject matter expertise, which are like the I define them as the technical skills required to do a specific job function, right? And that's how we get evaluated, and that's how people get raises and they get promoted up the ladder. But the other side of the model that no one really talks enough about are the character traits of a given person. So integrity, are they personable? Are they driven? Do they have interpersonal skills? Are they good at conflict resolution, right? Like all of these things. And it's funny, if you go, and I always do this, I start my meetings by just asking, like, give me the traits of your top performers. Like if you had to say they're one thing, what are they? And without a question, I always get these things back, right? The character traits. And I feel like there are so many people, it's not that they're lacking those things, it's just that they're not really paying attention to those things. And when you have really high character traits and you have really high technical skills for the job function that you're performing in, that's where you're going to be a high performer, right? If you use a football analogy, I always say like Antonio Brown has the high technical skills. He's just not really a good team player. Mm-hmm. So no one wants him on their team. On the reverse of that is Rudy, right? The movie Rudy, very high character skills, doesn't have really like much of a technical skills around football. But you always want the Rudy on your team, because that person you can pour into, you can develop, you can help them grow, because they're thirsty and they're hungry and they want. So I think the way you are as a person is, like you started the conversation by saying you were lucky and you had really meaningful and important people that came into your life, which that is true. But I think that you've opened up the window because of the person that you are and the character traits that you have, and that desire to want to be good and to want to grow and to want to have a big impact. When people see that, they want to pour into that, right? And if you saw that in another person, you would 100% want to pour into them. But I want to get back into this. So you're the founder and owner of Tri-State Furniture, right?
Mm-hmm.
Big now, real big. Back then, you're just getting into this, right? The liquidation side. And it's funny because I just had Kellen Campbell on. He talked all about Mac discount,
mm-hmm.
and how they're doing that from an Amazon perspective, right? People return the goods and they buy them in bulk and then they sell them back through an auction website. So how is this working in the furniture world? Is this just like furniture that's being returned by customers or by businesses, or it just has defects? And then you're saying like, hey, like we can start to build a business around this. Like at what point do you go from being in the industry to saying like, I'm going to go start and do my own thing?
It wasn't long. Like okay. I took a job at that small business, that office furniture company. And within 9 months, they were sold to a bigger office furniture company. In that move, they said that they would buy the company only if I came along for the account. So I went from delivery installation guy to selling within like 6 months, because I knew I was always going to be a salesperson. I'm good at what I do. I have it in me, in my blood. And so yeah. I'm really good at what I do. And I also good at customers feeling comfortable and safe with me, knowing I'm not looking to make money on them, that I'm looking to sell them something that has value. So, That was 9 months. Went to the dealership to purchase this dealership I was at. That was 9 months, and then started my first business in the office furniture.
And was that Tri-State?
No, it was another company that for 12 years I had a partner, and we just went our separate ways. And after 12 years, I opened Tri-State, which will be 15 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
So is there a way to quantify, like, the, maybe not quantify, but at least give a, like, an idea of the scale that you're at today? Like, do you have so many accounts, or like you have certain partnerships in place with certain organizations? Like, what are some of the things that you're really proud of from a growth perspective of where you're at today?
I'm proud that first year we did under $1 million, and last year we did over 20.
Oh, wow.
That's in 15 years, but that's, I build infrastructure first, you know, it's all, but now we can handle more and more growth. We'll double that in the next 3 or 4 years. But, you know, things you learn along the way, the structure that we built for where we are now, we wouldn't have been ready if we just automatically, you know, invented something, and we had to just start, you know, help our, being able to get to our customer, get it to the end. Now we can't. So we're really big right now. It's the growth from the company I used to have to what I have now is we're 5 or 6 times bigger than that company was, or still is. You know, and the employees I have, you go back and I don't hire, we don't hire experience, we hire people.
Yeah.
I feel better hiring people because we're a team. When you hire experience in this industry, some people say, oh, well, I worked at so-and-so, excuse me, I worked at so-and-so company, and this is what we did. Well, this is Tri-State Office Furniture. We have a different way of doing lots of things. And, you know, they always say, you know, train them to leave, but pay them to stay.
Right.
We do that. We do both. We don't lose many employees. During COVID, we retained everyone. During the whole time, even though it was the worst time I've ever been in the business. But these are philosophies we have.
Yeah. Like
teamwork, bringing out the best in you and picking up the worst in you.
Yeah, and I think that goes back to a little bit of what I was saying with that matrix, in that, like, so much of the technical work and a lot of the professions can be taught, right? You just got to have the right person that's willing to learn and grow. And it's the other things that actually make them a really, like having the Rudys on your team, right? Mm-hmm. Because you can kind of make sure that they're a good fit for the culture that you're trying to build. I resonate a little bit with what you were talking about from an infrastructure perspective, because now it sounds like you're at the point where you can just pour gas on the fire and it just goes. You know, from a gym owner perspective, like, you know, if someone said to me, hey, I could bring you 50 clients next month, would that be good? Like, from a growth perspective, it sounds awesome, but the challenge would be that they would probably have a bad experience, because I don't have all of the systems built out yet in a scalable way where we could accommodate that many people and give them the same level of experience that we're giving, you know, people that are just coming in right now. So I've been thinking a lot about the right systems and the infrastructure in place. But you brought up the people, and I wanted to touch on this, because at one point in a Bradley Center meeting, you were talking about employees and how important, you know, how important it is to you create, like, the way that you treat your employees. So where are you at today from a number of employees perspective? Like, just generally, how many do you have?
Almost 70.
Yeah. And these are people that, like you said, you're looking for people that you feel are driven, that have the interpersonal skills, and that can come in and just be a part of your culture.
And again, that's my system, is talking to people. I've hired many Uber drivers that are working for us, but me taking an Uber and talking to them, I'm like, you got to work for me.
Yeah.
You know, people like that I see every day talking to. I like the person. The person's good. Tri-State drives all the business in. So we spend, you know, over $500,000 a year on advertising. So our salespeople don't have to go out and network, you know, and do all the things that you have to do to build a book.
Yeah.
We bring it in. So my philosophy is bringing it in and having the right people that treat people right. That, you know, some people we have really good salespeople, and then we have order takers, and that's nothing wrong with that. The order takers are the ones that, you know, they can take everything that the customer wants and make it and turn it around. The salespeople have to go out and compete against other dealers and sell. Yeah. And we assist them on that. But, you know, having the best person, whether we're delivering and installing and selling, is important to, like, customer service that I was, you know, based on and raised up to do. Again, having the right people. I can have the best person, just like you said, Antonio Brown, greatest receiver maybe ever to live, if he would have played a little more and, you know, kept his personal life out of it. But, you know, would rather have the team that wins the championship, not the person that wins the MVP.
Right.
And, you know, I always joke with our people at Christmas or any parties we have, and I say, we're the land of misfits, and I'm the biggest one here. And what I mean by is, we put everything together collectively. It's a great company.
Yeah.
Separately, even including myself, we don't know where we'd be. But collectively, the company is great because we all work as a team.
Yeah.
And I'm only as good as that team. So,
that's amazing.
Yeah.
Do you know all 70 people personally?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
All 70 can come in my office at any time and talk about, shut my door and talk about something going on personally.
Yeah.
Money issues, whatever. I'm there for them. They know that. There's not a person that works for me that doesn't know that. They know that I will help you. And sometimes people say, well, Ed, why do you do these things? Why? You're putting yourself out there. And, like, I don't care. Like, I'm not a normal businessman. It's all about the bottom dollar. Maybe that's not great. But mine is more, you know, based on how I can help people that work for me. What am I supposed to let them go home, not care about them?
Yeah.
You know, things like that. It's important to me. You know, there's no one that works for me that can't afford food. I grew up with onion sandwiches, mayonnaise sandwiches, and things like that, not having food. And I'm like, that's the first thing. It's how you spend your money. That's nothing I can do about it. But you're going to make enough money to be able to put food on your table for your families.
Yeah, that's incredible. I was hesitating asking that question because of where we were going with the conversation. Mm-hmm. It would have been awkward if you didn't know all 70 of them, but I'm thinking in the back of my head, there's no way he hasn't met with all 70 of these people.
Yeah, all the time.
A lot of time with them.
Yeah, that I can say that, but every one of them would tell you that they've talked to me or they can come to me for anything. And I tell them that all the time. And I go by the ones that had just had kids or families, how they doing. It's important to me. It's not like something I read off of paper. Well, maybe I better go by Zach and ask how his daughter is. Or, you know, go by Frankie and ask how his relationship is with his girlfriend. Yeah. Like, these are important things, you know, that I remember.
Yeah, and I think that I struggle with this a lot from a business perspective. Because, and this is probably one of the reasons I'm so, like, drawn to you. I really struggle with the conventional business, like, practices. So I used to do management consulting, and I always joke that if I were to hire myself to come in and kind of, like, do an assessment of the way I'm running this gym, I would probably come back with, like, a 10 things, like, stop doing this. This is not good for business, right? From a financials perspective, right? Where can I save a little bit? You know, stupid examples like, you know, we, you know, even now, we'll have coaches that, like, I just randomly, you know, offer up, like, hey, if you have an opportunity to pop in as a co-coach, pop in as a co-coach, right? And from a numbers perspective, we might not actually need that. You know, if there's 8 people in a class, you probably don't need a second coach. But I want my staff to feel like they have opportunities to continue being a part of the gym, make a little extra money. I want the customers to know that if we have a chance, we're going to put multiple coaches to give you a little bit more attention in the class. And there's a lot of stuff like that that I constantly struggle with because I'm like, would we be further along if I cut some of those things out? And the answer is always maybe financially, but where would you have made a major impact to your staff experience or your customer experience? And it's those things that are really hard to quantify, right?
Sure.
And I see someone like you that has built a really successful company. And you're saying things that most executives, at least executives that I've ever been in contact with or in business with or working for, they don't talk like this, right? It's always about the bottom line. They always want to see return on investment. There's never things like customer experience or you can't really quantify that. So I'm always thinking we're having the wrong conversations. Like, we should be thinking about the experience a little bit more. And everyone's so drawn to the dollar. I think to hear you talk about your philosophies, how much you care about your people, like maybe that impacts your bottom line, you putting yourself out there, people asking why. But at the end of the day, you're gonna create an experience like no other experience for a lot of people in their lives. They're gonna have someone that like you that most people don't have an opportunity to kind of work for and get to know, and you're gonna leave a longer legacy, right? So one of the things that has really drawn or driven me in the last couple of years is the thought about when I'm dying and I'm on my deathbed, what am I going to regret? You know, what am I going to regret not doing? Or the things that I like wish I would have just had a little bit more courage to say, like, well, why don't you try to see if you can do that? You know, do you have things like that? Do you think of things from a legacy perspective? Is there a certain like fear you have, something that you think that you are fearful of regretting at some point?
If I'm fearful of regretting anything, it'd be more personal things that happen in my life. You know, we all make mistakes, and we all can learn from. As far as legacy, that's what I'm trying to leave. But my legacy, I'm not leaving based on the fact that my name's on a wall and I paid for that. I'm not saying anything about that. My legacy is leaving back the people that I've touched, and they understood I cared. I always relate it to, and we probably can't unless we know, but the successful person you become, the more people you teach are the ones that show up to pay their respects at your funeral. You see what I'm saying? Like, there's I had a friend last year that and again, you always hear it. He's the greatest guy ever, greatest family, father, dad, husband, great business guy, one of the best people you ever want to meet, took his life. And you know, they couldn't. There was lines. It was like at a Disney ride. Like it took 2 or 3 hours just to get to the casket. And theirs are the people he touched. Like that, they weren't all just. You don't have that many friends and family. These are people that were touched by who you were, and that's important. That's more important to me. Yes, I could make a lot more money if I, you know, cut costs and not pay people as much and try to get cheaper labor and things like that. I don't really care. Like, my life is really good right now. I don't have my success is not based on how much I'm putting in my bank. Now again, I'm not a normal businessman, and I'm not saying anything about that. Mine is more about how, you know, to make people happy, to live a comfortable life, and move on from there. But I do want to leave legacy where people say he did something for me. He touched me. He fed me. He clothed me. He helped me. He got me through drugs. You know, he got me, you know, places where no one ever even cared. So that's what I want to be left.
Yeah, that's incredible. So let's transition then to the Bradley Center. So for anyone that's listening to this that doesn't know much about the Bradley Center, they basically work with a lot of children that have a background of, you know, mental, physical, sexual abuse. You know, they struggle with from a psychological perspective, some of them, and they typically have some sort of behavioral aspect, right? And so they're a residential treatment facility. They actually will treat the children there. They're house the children there. Some of the children are brought in from the school districts and they get their education there. So they work really, really hard to impact a population of children that I think is underserved, would be a fair way of saying it. So we're on the board together. I don't want to go too much into like my, you know, how I got onto that and my why. You know, I think at a high level, I wanted to set aside some time and, you know, try to give back and help a little bit. And this was an organization that was working with kids, and I said, okay, cool. And I show up to the board meetings and I try to give my input, and I'll answer questions, and if there's things that need to be done, we do the gift wrapping every year. I take a team and we wrap all the gifts, and you know, we try to do the gift drives and that kind of stuff, right? Basically, I'm doing like the check the box kind of activities as a board member, in helping, you know, in ways that I can. You are different. So I think it seems like your mindset is like, listen, I really want to help these kids, and you do incredible things. And I don't know all of the things that you do, but I just know from some of the anecdotal conversations I've had with Pat how important you are to the Bradley and how you've showed up in so many like really significant ways in times of need and said like, here you go, I'll take care of this for you. I've been in meetings with you where you're like, I'll handle that. My team will take care of that. And so I want to just kind of get into like, why is that organization so important to you? Why do these kids matter to you so much?
Well, you know, first of all, that could be me. So, that's the big part. Like, I was lucky to, again, lucky that people took a liking and took, that they had to, you know, work with me, build me up. There was something about me that they seen. So, like, that could be me. And they have nowhere to go. And, you know, kind of similar to, I'm on the board of Humane Animal Rescue, too, as well. But
what was that, the Animal Rescue?
Humane Animal Rescue of Pittsburgh, yeah. HARP. And, you know, I tell Pat Hargest or Lisa Fox at the Bradley Center, you know how easy it is to generate income and donations for animals, which I love animals, that's why I'm on there, than there are children, you know, because people are more giving towards animals. And I think because they think the government takes care of the children when you and I and a lot of other people know they don't. So, you know, it's important for that. Like these kids, where are they going to go? The success rate is not really good. You know, the jails, the morgues, the streets, they're filled with these kids that come out of places like the Bradley Center, or even worse, that never make it there, you know? And so that's important to me to, again, go back and touch a life. Can you save everyone? No, can't. Can you help save some people? Yeah. You know, I'm not gonna save the world. Like, they already know that. I can't help someone, and I get lots of people all the time, you know, from all over the world asking me, can I donate to this, donate to that? And it's hard for me to say no, but I have to focus on my area where, you know, I'm not a billionaire where I can help multiple people, but I'm focused on my area where, you know, I can help the people around me. You know, that's the philosophy. And these kids, man, some of the stories on graduation day, and, you know, they're just, it's horrible what they, I mean, you only really have one life. You're only a kid once. And these kids aren't kids. They don't know what it's like to be a kid, to be happy. That Christmas program is, what Bradley does up there is great. And they give these kids a little bit of somewhat of a life that they don't know about, you know, or maybe never would have seen.
Yeah.
And so let's just say that happens. It's a constant evolution. Now they become parents because they're low income, maybe welfare. That's all they have to do. And then now their kids become them. It's just it's a continuance of, you know, what happens in our society. And they're discarded. So that's important for me to try to do something. I mean, I know I'm going to do something. I'm going to give the best, you know, whatever I can, my all. And, you know, I'm going to take on things, and it's important to me.
Yeah, I mean, they're extraordinarily lucky to have you and people like you, because I've seen, you know, them say, like, we have a need, and you say, I'll take care of that for you, whether it's making connections with people or giving furniture or making very charitable donations. And, you know, there's people like me saying, they're going like, oh gosh, how are we going to solve the problem? And then there's people like you that are coming in saying like, we're going to solve the problem, you know?
Well, I'm a lot older than you. And, we're at my life where I'm at, I can do a lot more. I mean, you'll be there. You have the heart. So it's all you really need is the heart. It doesn't matter what you do. I don't care if you bring one kid lunch or I buy 50 pizzas. It's the same thing. It doesn't matter. It's like when someone comes in and says, I know you guys are really big and I just want to buy a chair. Like, you're a customer. You're saying, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
You can't. It's like, why would you treat someone differently?
Right.
You know, so that's what I look at. You're helping.
Yeah, I love that you said that, because that's the one thing that I think people, I know I personally have struggled with a little bit, where you get it in your head that like you don't have the time to really show up in the way you might want to show up, because you got kids going on, you got a family, you got all these things happening. But at the end of the day, a little bit can go a really long way. You know, I always use the example, like if you were like riding your bike past someone that was drowning, you know, would you like not save them just because you don't think you have the time every day to stop and save people? Just a little bit of like, hey, taking a couple minutes out of your day can actually make a huge impact. Like you said, maybe it's just me buying one kid lunch, not buying 50 kids lunch.
Doesn't matter.
But I think what you said before about the animals versus the children and how people are so willing to donate money to the animals, there really is a big disconnect. And I don't know if it's because of HIPAA violations and like people not being able to really market and advertise the struggle that kids go through. Because you see those like commercials with the dogs and you're like, you want to donate right away, right? They're very sad, they're beaten. And we don't see that from the kids' perspective. So even being on the board of the Bradley, it never really hit home for me until some of the graduation stories, right? Like I'm sitting next to a kid at graduation and he says, I would have never been here. I would have never seen this day if it wasn't for the Bradley Center. And then I'm at one of the events that the kids put on, a play, and there's a little kid and he's bouncing around from teacher to teacher and he's kind of just like trying to sit next to them. And Pat leans over and says, like, can you imagine being, I don't know how old the kid was, 9 years old and being institutionalized? And when we hear words like institutionalized, I think of like white walls and, you know, that kind of stuff and just uncomfortable. The Bradley Center does an amazing job in making this as much of a home as it possibly can, as they can for these kids, and giving them amazing treatment. But at the end of the day, you're not with a family, right? You're not living a life that so many people have expected. And you brought up Christmas. You know, I try to say that a lot, especially when I put out messages to my members for the gift tree. And like, these kids probably have never seen a Christmas the way that most people think about Christmas, right? They don't have wrapped gifts and there's no tree, you know. And so for, you know, a team of people to come together and put on what they put on to give these kids something to wake up to on Christmas Day in an institution, I think is pretty incredible. But it's people like you that are really, I mean, honestly, people like you kind of keep me motivated, right? To keep helping and to keep giving and to keep like aspiring, because like you said, even though I might not be able to do as much as you're doing now, you know, from financials perspective and stuff like that, it still makes me want to care and help because of how much you care and want to help. So you're on two boards, you're on HARP and the Bradley Center. Where else are you at? Because it sounds like the business is kind of like, it's now at the point where you want it to be. You want to, you know, you kind of started this saying that you want to continue to have an impact and to help people. I've heard you talk about running, you know, from a political perspective. So maybe we can dive into that. Are you looking at like state representative level, district representative? Is that something that's still on your radar?
It's still on my radar. The problem is people who know me is telling me not to do it because they're like, Ed, they're just gonna ruin who you are.
Yeah.
But I'm like, how do I get to the government? You know, to say so I'll go back a little bit. McKees Rocks is going to be my focus. Yeah. I've been down there 28 years, business on both companies. And 28 years, I haven't seen any change. You know, it's like the only time that people in low income areas are good is when election time. Then you don't see anything after that. You know, we do a food program every Wednesday. We help feed, you know, 100, 200 people. We have our McKees Rocks Pirate Night at PNC Park, where I think last year we had 2,000 residents from McKees Rocks has never been in PNC Park. DeMar Hamlin's brother threw out the first pitch. His parents were there. DeMar was on the scoreboard. You know, he wanted to beat her, but when you're affiliated to, you know, major league sports, you walk a fine line. You can't really, you know, advertise someone else or, you know. But anyway, it was a great night. We got to show people we care. We, you know, bought football uniforms from Stowe Rocks High School. We have our Pirate Fest. The Penguins, the Pirates, both, we clean up streets. I give scholarships to Stowe Rocks seniors. These are things I'm going to continue to do. So, like, I'm going to find more and more things to bring to Stowe Rocks. Again, I'm not a billionaire, but I have political contacts that have helped with funding. Sean Gibson, who's a good friend of mine, and Sean Gibson of the Josh Gibson Foundation, we're working on building the Miracle Field, the Josh Gibson Academy. And it's important because there's nothing down in the rocks. They don't have any. These kids go nowhere. You don't even see them on the street riding bikes. We do a food program. If your refrigerator breaks, we'll replace it and put $200 of food in it, which I'll go buy because I'm not going to give anybody $200. And during COVID, they didn't have laptops. You can't. And unfortunately, for a lot of reasons, their parents sell them. Whatever. I mean, you have to get money to get money. You don't know what, and it's sad. So, I want to create a learning center where kids can be tutored. So many things I'm going to do the rest of my life in that area. Because, I mean, I grew up in Pittsburgh. I grew up in a city, but, like, this is my home. Like, I've been there 28 years and haven't seen change. So, a lot more things are coming to the rocks. So.
Yeah, you mentioned Miracle Field. What is Miracle Field?
It's baseball. It'd be an indoor field, but this center would be more than that. It'd be a senior citizens, a tutor, learning, after school, where kids can go till their parents are done. There's so many things we're going to do. It's not just one thing. And it's based on community as well, but it's where kids that are handicapped can play ball and indoor field, and it's just getting every child involved. And Sean Gibson and Josh Gibson, they do one remarkable job. I'm so impressed by that guy and what he does and how eloquent and he speaks, and I like to listen to him. I told you I like listening to people. I love listening to Sean when he talks and seeing the passion he has for his great grandfather and paying that all forward, which is, I tell him all the time, it's just awesome.
So. Yeah, that's awesome. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I heard because as you were saying all of that, right, I keep thinking about like how does the problem actually eventually get solved, right? Because even if you throw money at certain areas, it might temporarily fix or bring some level of relief, but at the end of the day, how do you really solve the problem? And I think it's through, it's almost like creating a culture. You're showing kids different directions, and you're showing them what's out there, and you're giving them education, and you're teaching them skills. And it took me back to a TED Talk that I went to. It was a TEDx event in Pittsburgh, and there was a guy here in Pittsburgh. I wish I could remember his name. But he basically, his whole premise was that he would take people that were coming out of prison, and he would put them through an academy to teach them how to use tools and to do work. And he said, it's amazing what you'll see when you teach people skills and you give them, like, you show them their worth, and you teach them how to do stuff and how to make money for themselves, that can go a really long way, and he's made a major impact on people's lives doing that. And I think, like, hearing about your vision, like, it's exciting to think about something like that to come, but it's just so hard for someone like me to get my head around it. It's just going to take people like you, and the people that you're working with to show up and make miracles happen. But I think that's the only way that it really changes.
Well, it changes. You're right. So I can tell you there's so many good people in the rocks, so many good parents, so many just really caring people, right? And it's no different than, one bad apple or whatever. If you don't get the kids when they're young, 5, 6, 7, 8, that's where you got to get them. That's how you change. You change letting them know that people care, letting them not starve.
Right.
During COVID, they didn't have, until they started, I think it was months later, these kids go to school to have lunch and breakfast, and they didn't have that. So you got to start it with the youth and say, look, you are important. When they're 15, 16, you could say some kids there, but there's already anger. Like, nobody cares, and I'm just getting, this is going to be my whole life. Now, there's always parents that are really hard, and they work 2-3 jobs, and they get their kids out of there, and and educate them and keep them in the right way. But you could be the best parent and your kid can go the wrong way. It's not always in your hands. Again, it has to captivate and capture them when they're younger. That's the only way I see, you know, turning around. So there's not really any big time government programs there. Again, the rec center that they don't have, they need to have, and show that there are people that care, and so that everyone else, like, you know, senior citizens, whatever. I care about that community. I'm not getting any money back. It's a small community. It doesn't do anything to, you know, I'm not looking for accolades or anything else. Again, we talk about legacy. I'd rather help that community than anywhere else right now, because I'm just picking one part of my area that I can maybe, you know, do something with.
Yeah.
So that's all. I can't spread it out. It doesn't, I can spread it out. It's like, you know, you can saturate or you can just help one area. If everybody did that, then we wouldn't have to saturate it, you know, across the country. So
yeah, I think a mile wide, inch deep, you know, doesn't always work well, right? Mm-hmm. You just take one area and focus on that and make a huge impact.
Do what I can. Well, I'm going to make an impact. Hopefully it will be huge in the years to come. Yeah. I think it will be. That's the only reason why I'd want to get into politics, is try to help that area. You know, I want to clean it up and show that there's, I don't like that, you know, we had a pirate fest down there, and it was McKees Rocks Pirate Fest. It was a prequel to our McKees Rocks Night at PNC Park. I couldn't get one media outlet to come down and just do, like, to show that it's not about Tri-State, it's about, you know, McKees Rocks Night and people care. And I'm just going to tell you the little story. So they couldn't come to the whole night, but when I woke up in the morning, 6 blocks away from where we had our pirate fest thing, there was someone shot and killed. Now, that they were reporting that, so, you know, the media will go down and report the bad stuff. So what do you hear? Oh, I'm not going to the rocks. People are killed there and they're shot there. But that's the problem. What happens in society is, that's the area you don't want to go to. That's the area that's bad. That's the area that people are just terrible people. It's not. But if you can't get something good to talk about, but you can show up 6, 7, 8 hours later and talk about a murder, that's easier, and that brings more people to the TV and pay attention to. Yeah. That's the sad part, and that's what happens in communities like this. They're only good when there's something negative. Yeah. And there's so many people down there trying their best to just make it a better neighborhood. There's a lot of people I've met, fortunate enough to meet, throughout that whole community that are really trying hard to, you know, bring it to light. And, you know, I'm one of them. So.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think that, you know, you're right about the media, and that's a hard problem to solve. But the way you solve it is you get really passionate people that are willing to do whatever it takes to start shining lights on the areas that need a light shined. And, you know, I think that area is very lucky to have you as an advocate. And I know you're going to do incredible things there. Yeah. I want to talk about a little bit. You brought up your friend ended up committing suicide. I know depression, anxiety, something that's big for you and on your radar. Can we dive into that a little bit? Like,
sure.
Why is that? Why was it because of this thing that happened with your friend, or is it go back further than that? What is why is this an area that's so important to you? We'll start there.
Well, first of all, I am what do you want to call it? I've suffered my whole life through depression, anxiety. Anxiety brings depression, and I believe everybody has something, you know, chemically imbalanced in their body. I don't think, you know, when someone says, when the most perfect person, the most happiest person, I always say, I hope they are, but I feel like they're, you know, you're covering, because it's important to talk about these important things. That's the main important thing is your mental health. You can't do anything without mental health. Yeah. And, you know, I had, you know, my marriage that's over, my kids, we had a great family life, but I allowed anxiety, depression allowed me to not give up on my business. Meant everything. It meant everything, because I was supporting a family that, you know, my father wasn't able to do, that I was putting food on the table and giving the things I never had. And I let that get away from me. But I let it get away from me because of my anxiety, my depression, my ADHD, my OCD. And if I can help someone sit down and tell them my story, again, will be in my book, that I'm ready to put myself out there because it's only important. I wasted a lot of years. Like now I'm very chemically balanced. I have very little anxiety. Still have my ADHD and OCD, and it's things I can't get rid of, but I've learned a lot. I wish I knew this 30 years ago. And so if I can help people in their 20s understand you don't want to be in your 50s and try and then finally figure it out, there's a big gap that you just went through that maybe you didn't have to go through.
Yeah.
It drove me, but you know, you don't want to be driven that way. You know, I published this and wrote something. If I can read it for you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, give me 1 second.
Yeah, for sure. Well, when you're finding that, or while you're finding that, I'll say that, you know, for when I left my career and I went, I did management consulting, then I took a career in corporate. It was doing really well. I thought to myself, can I build a business? That's one thing I didn't want to regret later. Can I build a business? So I went into building a business, and what I didn't expect was how all of my difficulty came from mental health. I never experienced issues with mental health until I went into this, you know, kind of starting my own business. And I don't know what actually caused some of it, but I found myself in a really bad and dark place at different times, and it was hard. So like the building the business aspect was actually easy. It was managing people, managing comments, managing feedback, managing lots of relationships, managing what I thought needed to be the optimal or perfect perception, managing my personal life and how that trickled into the business. And honestly, like my girlfriend Shauna pulled me out of so much of that. But if it wasn't for her, I'm not sure where I would even be. And until all of that happened, it was hard to even like think about mental health because I wasn't personally experiencing too much of that. I had some personal things with myself, but not to the level where like I was literally going crazy, like with anxiety, and things were driving me almost mad. And I shouldn't over dramatize it because I probably had it nowhere near the level of a lot of people have it, but it was really, really hard and difficult. And I mean, like it time and time and time again saying like, I'm shutting this thing down. I can't do this. It's not worth it. I could be making a lot more money and be a lot more stress-free and not have to deal with any of this stuff. And you know, there are things that kept me going and I don't need to get into all those, but it's when you said what you said, that you think everyone at some point is going to experience some level, right? There's chemicals that get imbalanced. And if you don't, that's great, very happy for you, but most people probably will. You're right. I don't think a lot of people are talking about this stuff. And like, I didn't need a business consultant. I needed like a therapist. I needed someone to come in and help me with my mental state and kind of get that back into the check. And it's just, I didn't even know that I needed that at the time, you know? So I think, just to your point, I think that there are a lot of people that suffer in a lot of different capacities, and you don't have to be a business owner. It could be being a parent. It could be, you know, just your everyday life. So anyway, sorry, I'll let you get back.
No, it doesn't matter. Not just to touch on that is, people, you know, when I was growing up, you better not mention any of that. You know, like it was
taboo.
Yeah, taboo to say you have mental issues. Or if you did and you went to your parents and you know, it's a funny anecdote, but you say, like, just rub some dirt on it, you'll be okay, you know? So it was one of those things that people didn't talk about, but I will, because I don't care what people think about it. I'm trying to help people that don't realize that you can get through it. Don't fight it, because I fought it for 30 years and it's 30 years I wish I had back.
Yeah.
No, 30 years successful. I still, you know, I'm a great father. I love my kids. I was a great family man, but I allowed that to be ruined. And I ruined it. And, you know, if you can see that, it's the first start, you know, of like, man, I need to fix myself before I die, you know. And so that's what a lot of people don't handle and then or don't mention it. And next thing you know, they're doing something to hurt themselves or hurt others or they're just living in depression their whole life. So there's another side. I'm just not trying to let people go there. Let them know there's another side that you'll be happy. You've got to put the work in just like anything else.
Yeah.
So I go back to I wrote this and this is important to me. It's called adversity. I was born into it and most likely will die leaving it. As long as I'm on this earth, I will fight it every day. It drives me. It humbles me at times. But overall, it makes me stronger. So adversity to me is a part of depression and anxiety and OCD and ADHD because you're fighting everything and anything. You know, it's like trying to hit a baseball with your hand 100 miles an hour. You don't have a bat. You're fighting everything and anything without any tools. Right? And so you got to learn those tools and learn how to get around it. And maybe adversity won't be so, you know, everybody can say adversity. I grew up, I didn't have no money, I'm poor, you know, I could end up this or that, but it's the fight that you, it's all about mental health and that fight you put in. That's the number one thing to do. I don't care. There's so many successful people who are battling it now. Some are coming out and talking about it. Some refuse to. They think it's a sign of weakness, which I thought it was for 30 years. And I realized it's not. It's a sign of strength.
Yeah.
To tell people your story to help others.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that is a powerful thing that you just said, and that it really shows how strong you are to be vulnerable and introspective enough to understand the things that are going on with you and how you're struggling to get through those. I do think, you know, there's a notion around, you know, like we actually live in the easiest of times in the history of the world, maybe. Not certain places, definitely. People are still struggling in different degrees. But at the end of the day, we have a lot of information readily available. Most people are living a moderately comfortable life. And there's a lot of talk about right now, like, you know, do put yourself into a difficult situation, because in that situation, you'll actually figure out who you are. You'll learn a lot about yourself, right? And you'll get stronger and you'll come out a better person or a better version of you on the other side. To me, that's things like purposely doing hard exercise or, you know, challenging yourself by signing up to a race or just putting yourself into a little bit of fire, because you'll be met with resistance, adversity, and you'll adapt and develop tools to make you stronger. Unfortunately, I think that there are a lot of people that have a lot of these things happening that they don't have control over. They're being put into a fire. The silver lining in it is that if you can open yourself up and you can recognize what it is and you can continuously try to work on the things that you need to work on, you are becoming a stronger person in doing that. I think you're becoming like a better version of yourself. It's like alcoholics. I see this in alcoholics. Like they don't, or drug people that are addicted to drugs, they have to deal with a war every single day that most people never will even think about. You know, I heard someone, I've referenced this before, I heard a CEO talking about how they were addicted to Diet Coke, and when they tried giving it up, the impact it had on their life. And while that's not to be taken lightly, that probably did have a major impact on their life. But I mean, tell that to someone on heroin, you know, and they're going to, that's every single day they're dealing. I had EJ Hall on, he talked about his heroin addiction, and I mean, we're talking like 10 years later, you know, it's still something that people are fighting. Mm-hmm. Ultimately, that's building a lot of resiliency in people, but at the same time, it's killing them, you mm-hmm. know? And so I think it's so important that people realize they are strong and they are powerful, and that like fighting these things is making them strong and stronger and more powerful. But at the same time, if you just fight it blindly, or you fight it ignorantly, or if you try to throw mud on it, like you said, right? It's going to eventually break you, mm-hmm. right? It's kind of like, You don't just go out and run a marathon. You start to learn how to fuel properly, sleep properly, build up to it, right? Like you get the tools and the training and the knowledge and the education. And now, yes, you can run a marathon. You're equipped to run it. And in doing that, it's going to make you stronger and more powerful as a person. It's kind of the same thing on the side of the equation where like you don't have control over these things. But if we can get people knowledge and information and tools and resources, now they can take their circumstances and work through them in a way where they can still, succeed in life and come out a better person. But again, it's people like you that are bringing this to the table, that I think is so important. And you talked about, you might want to do a podcast one day, right? Like, is this the kind of stuff that you'd want to focus on?
I want to focus on day-to-day life with people and trying to help people. You talk about drugs and alcohol. People don't realize that's a devil calling you every day. He's calling you every day. He's like a telemarketer. He's calling you from different numbers. He's trying to get to you and wants you to answer that phone. And there's different adversities to fight, but that's probably the hardest one. I mean, people can be clean for 15, 20 years, and it only takes, well, maybe get my tooth extracted or something where the doctor gives me a little bit of pain medicine, and then next you know, I love it, and here I want to go again, right? And you're right. So it's like helping anybody. It doesn't matter whatever you're fighting, but you need that help, and you need that consistent help. It's not easy to get over those hurdles. But again, hard life sometimes is a great lesson. Because then you're used to things and then you can fight off whatever comes your way. Now, there's always going to be something comes your way that you're not strong enough for. But, learning, like, you have to get through things and life isn't easy because life's hard, helps a lot to, fight off most of the stuff that comes your way. And it's going to come one way or another. No one goes through life unscathed. I don't think they do. But, I talk about it. People don't, but I know people going through the same things that I go through or fight. But I want to talk about it, so I'm not afraid of what is people going to say about me that they haven't said it. There's always going to be haters. The haters drive me. But people hear things about you. They like to stretch the truth or tell other people, and then it goes down the chain, and something else happens. You can't make everybody happy. So I feel for anybody that has to that are afraid to talk to, you're afraid to talk about it, regardless.
And I think that's where courage plays a role, because when you start acting in accordance to the things that you truly believe in, despite the feedback or the adversity that you face in doing that, I think it takes a lot of courage. And that's actually where I'm at kind of now, where I'm waking up to the realization that I can't be a person that every single person likes, right? I've tried so hard to play kind of like the mayor role where, I get into this, like I just don't think I'm being my true self or my authentic self. And at the end of the day, like not everyone's gonna like you. And maybe it's not that they don't even like you, but maybe like you're just not their complete cup of tea. That's okay. Like I just had to learn, like you don't have to be everyone's best friend, and you don't have to be, just focus on the people that really matter to you and the people that you want to help, and just be yourself, and then that'll actually unfold a much more beautiful life. If you kind of hide under this blanket and try to be something to everyone, you end up being not much to anyone,
Like
right?
living for someone else.
Yeah, exactly.
I always say the person or the people I help the most, and it's. There's a the percentages of people who hate are the ones that I wasn't helping anymore. You can only help someone that can help themselves as well. Like you can help, you can try to build them up, you can let them know you care, but then you have to look back at their life and everything they do is pointing at other people. You're never gonna save that person because they don't want to be saved, and they're gonna hate you when you stop. And so that's the thing I always had a hard time getting, like, why? I gave this person everything, did everything. I'd be anywhere with if they needed something, and then, something happens and they're not working with me anymore. It becomes like this. But I don't let that bother me because I always say, judge me by the many, not by the few.
Yeah,
So,
exactly. And we touched on addiction and alcohol and drug addiction, and I'll just say that I think another thing that's not really talked about a lot is how the definition of what those things are, especially when it comes to alcohol, you know, there's not a real clear-cut definition on what an alcoholic is. I think a better way to talk about it is the relationship that you have with alcohol and the effect or impact it has on your life. And I think if people were to really step back and take a look at that, and instead of maybe they're, you know, don't want to call themselves an alcoholic. You know, I'm like that. I never wanted to call myself an alcoholic. But if I step back and say, like, how's my relationship with alcohol? Let's see. You know, if I have a couple drinks, what happens? I want to keep drinking, right?
I think most people do.
If I, you know, start finding myself drinking one, two, three nights a week, what happens? Well, my entire routine goes out the window, right? I start showing up not the person I am at work. And these are little things, right? It's I didn't get this thing done today that I would have got done. I didn't get this workout in that I would have got in. Very minute things, but they end up having a very cascading and big impact on my life because I missed this workout here, I didn't do this at work on this day, and now everything's just kind of trickling downhill, it's piling up, and I'm not anywhere near as efficient or productive or performing at the level that I could be performing at. And it could be silly things like I didn't, you know, I felt not so great, so I sat on a couch and watched TV when I could have been out having a really awesome adventure with my daughter or whatever. And I think people think that they're okay because they're only having drinks here and there and they only get drunk every now and again. But if you really step back and say, you know, would my quality of life go up in all the areas that matter to me, at work, at family, at recreation? If the answer to that is yes, then you probably don't have an amazing relationship with alcohol, right?
You probably don't, but you know what I look at? People that, you know, obsess over alcohol and drugs, any addiction, but mainly those two, is they're numbing themselves. So there's something deeper than, you know, people. I don't believe people get high because they want to get high the rest of their life. I think people get high two reasons. One, I want to get high on a Saturday, whether I'm drinking or alcohol. You know, I just want to feel it, not, you know, have fun. But then they realize that numbs me. When I'm doing that, I don't think about anything. I don't have to worry about where my bills are being paid or if my girlfriend's breaking up with me. And then I think it becomes that habit to where I'm just going to keep numbing myself. And that goes back to mental health. A lot of people just say a drug addict, alcoholic. Who, you know, I was in church with my daughter, and there's four people, older people, like probably in their 60s, in front of us praying and, you know, holding their hand up to God and everything, which is cool. We go to breakfast, and they sat at a table next to us. And the first thing the lady said was, "I don't know why they even have Narcan, just let them die." So I had to stand up and say, "Can I ask you something? Did anybody ever die in your family of drugs and alcohol?" "No." I said, "Well, you're lucky. And for you to come out of church praying to say, let them die. These are human beings. They're someone's kid, someone's mom, dad, brother, sister, little, you know, how can you say that?" They don't, that the stigma of it is they're just losers. They want to be on drugs their whole life. But the main thing is it's mental health. It's numbing you from something happened in your life or something that's going on. And that's where we got to get to the root. Will we ever? No, there's too much drugs pouring into this country. It's never gonna never be fixed. But you got to try again. Save the ones you can save.
Well, just to not to give a lot of personal stories here, but for me, one of the big things was you know, I started looking at like, well, I don't have fun doing that unless I'm drinking and I'm drunk, right? And I'm like, well, I'm not gonna have fun doing anything. Like I It wasn't fun to go to Steeler games at a certain point in my life. Now it is, you know, with the family, it's fun to go sober. But it wasn't fun going to country concerts. It wasn't fun going to Steeler games. It wasn't fun hanging out on Friday night with a group of people or having a dinner or going to a, you know, a house party or it, none of that was fun unless I was drinking and getting drunk. And so I started to ask myself, like, well, maybe instead of like drinking and just going with the flow, maybe you should stop doing those things. Are there other things that you would really could fill your time with that would be more rewarding? That's when I started playing racquetball early in the morning. I started getting into exercise. I started spending more time in the trails and the woods and doing trail runs. And that's like, people talk about lifestyle. That's where my lifestyle actually started to change. And it was more accommodating to the things I liked. And what I've learned in all of this is that I'm actually a very, I mean, a lot of people think I'm extroverted just because I'm outgoing and I'm very introverted. My energy levels actually go down in social environments. Like, I can't sit in meetings all day. I'll actually be very, very drained. And I didn't know that about myself because I was masking it with alcohol. I could be social if I was drunk. Now I can't be at places, like, and it's just, it's kind of made me rethink about like where I enjoy my time. And it's not out with a bunch of big groups of people. Like, I like what we're doing. I like sitting down I'd rather do this than be out with 10 people, you know, in a social scene and just having like, you know, how was your weekend? I don't care much for those kind of conversations. I care about this kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So I've just been sort of changing my lifestyle and prioritizing my time to be spent in the areas that actually feed me, so I get energy out of them versus like drain me, right? And if that's helpful for anyone, that's why I wanted to throw it out
there.
That
should be, that's very helpful. I was just going to say that before you said the word, but, you know, again, you were doing it, one, because you thought you had to.
Yeah.
So that becomes a habit, an addiction to, I can't go anywhere without drinking because I'm not going to have fun at a concert or a football game. And you made a conscious decision to change that. And, you know, people feel like, or I got to go out and talk in situations. I'm an introvert. And, oh, by the way, that Percocet helped me do it. Yeah. I was so lively in front of people. And, wow, I'm going to do it every time I go to a meeting where I have to speak. And then it becomes a part of your life. Like, you buy into it. Like you said, you buy into it. Like, I need this because I'm not going to be able to do this.
Right.
But you made that decision. And the what you said, it means a lot to people. You should tell more people that, is that you can. I did. You can. You don't need this to have fun. You know, and I think that's the important things, education and telling people, like, you know, there's people out there that suffer. You know, ones that are suffering, they see other people. They say, why can't that be me? Why am I like this? And then you just go more and more into that that abyss, you know?
Yeah, for sure. I want to ask you about the book. So are you in a position yet to talk anything about it, like the title, when it'll be coming out, or is that all to be revealed at another time?
No, so there's a two phases of that. I will be releasing what I call a guide. It's about 80 pages of fighting adversity and anxiety and depression. And then it's a prequel to my book. My book will be done probably in another year or so. There's so many things. You know, when you start out and you want to tell everything to educate people, you go back and look and you're like, well, maybe I don't want to tell that. You know, it's a battle. Like, but then you're like, I should tell that so people can see. And then I don't want to hurt people that might be part of this and keep people out. So it takes a while to get that all together. I wanted to get something out there now that just helps people understand that you can battle through the adversity and the depression and anxiety, and you can get to the other side. You know, along the way, it can either ruin you or make you better, but overall it'll ruin you if you don't fix it. You know, so that's the guide that's coming out, just to be a prequel to the book. The book's going to talk more and more in depth about my whole personal life, the struggles all the way through, from, you know, being read my last rites for 2 weeks after I was born, to, you know, dealing with multiple health issues and things like that.
Yeah.
Plus, you know, just the way I grew up with poverty and things of that nature. So I will tell all.
Yeah.
You know, again, it's like telling people you don't want to show weakness where weakness can be shown. I'm a guy that doesn't show weakness. But I've lately been able to do more and more, you know, and talk about it. So I want to get out there, too, on the circuit. I don't want paid for it. I want to talk to youth and tell them, like, you know, I could just give up, throw my hands up, throw the white flag. Who cares? I'm going to give up, or I can keep going. And that's what I did.
Yeah.
So, you know, get to the youth, get to them, let them know that it's not all about what you think. It's about what you want to be.
Yeah.
Be the change. That's the thing. So,
So the part one of the book, is there a distribution for that in mind? Is it going to be like on Amazon?
Yeah, it'll be on Amazon and then other locations, you know, where we'll have it. I'm working with the publishing company now, and we're going through everything. You know, they're just going through and make sure everything's put in the right place. And yeah. I actually have a meeting tomorrow on Zoom with them, and it should be out by fall. Again, it's not about the making the money. It's about getting it out there.
Yeah.
You know, so, I'm not even sure. I might just give it away for free. If I did anything, it would 100% would go to, you know, some kind of charity that I'm working with now. You know,
yeah.
I'd probably mix it up with the Bradley Center and, you know, maybe not Hart because they got a lot of money coming in, but maybe something in McKees or Ox or whatever. So there's more things to do with that. It's about just getting a message out there, and hopefully one person that can help, if not, you know, hundreds.
Yeah, that's amazing. I just some food for thought. I've been thinking about the idea of a book for a long time, just on some of the things that I really want to put out there that I think could help a lot of people. You know, I think the benefit of a book or even a meaningful conversation is that, you know, what took someone 10 years to learn, they can learn, you know, someone else can learn in a day, mm-hmm. right? Condensed decades down into days. And so I've had this idea of this rise up hero kind of theme, in that, you know, we're not all going to be millionaires and we're not all going to be professional athletes, but it doesn't mean that we can't find a really great version of ourselves that has an impact on, you know, the people that are around us and creating our own legacies. And so it's, you know, it's what I've learned in this whole journey, in that, you know, the business, the gym, I'm making less than what I was making 4 years ago, significantly. I've lost a lot of money. But the reality is, and I actually just posted this on LinkedIn, that my lifestyle is in such that, like, I'm doing everything that I love and I'm really finding fulfillment and happiness. You know, having a conversation with you, this means the world to me. I can't thank you enough for coming on. The ability to have a sit down and talk with you, it's amazing. I get to run whenever I want. I get to spend, you know, time with my family. And I did a leadership conference at Dollar. Like, I'm doing all these things that I really love. And it's not so much about the money. It's about, you know, where I'm finding joy and fulfillment. And I think that's the whole theme of the book, right? Like, is this rise up hero and finding the best version of yourself and chasing that. And, you know, I hear words about, like, finding your true purpose, you know, hitting that, like, that state of fulfilling your true potential. It's like, what does that actually mean? I think our purpose here on earth is to figure out what our potential is. What are we capable of doing? Becoming a better version of ourselves. So anyway, I continuously thought through this, and I thought about creating a newsletter that would just frequently go out, and they would be built out. So I'd have 100 emails already built out. And if you sign up to the newsletter, you know, on a certain cadence, you'll get an email and it'll be a little snippet. Just because I want people to have access to the information. You know, but I don't, it takes a lot to do that. But I think, if at any point you ever get really bored in life and just want to do like a blog or a newsletter, I think, you know, because the scalability of that is endless, right? People can subscribe to a newsletter and they get, like, maybe it's two paragraphs or a paragraph just on your thoughts. And I think, like, just who you are and your knowledge and your experience and your wisdom and your insights in these, like, little micro doses of information could be really powerful. And that could feed into, like, people then wanting to buy part one of the book or part two. So not to throw a spotlight on you to, like, say, like, hey, you should start a newsletter. I think if you start anything and you're putting it out there, I think people are going to be drawn to it.
Well, no, I think a lot of people know me now, what I'm, you know, seriously about.
Yeah.
You know, I'm about helping people. But, you know, I think that anybody should look at their life, and, you know, success is not money. I mean, obviously money in my life, not earlier in my life, but make things easier. But I got to tell you, it's a majority of people that so-called have money, or they're not really happy.
Yeah.
You know, not, I'm not saying majority, but there's a good percentage that aren't. I think what you said is finding your potential and being happy with that. Would you, you know, opening your gym where you could be in the corporate world, make more money, but I guarantee you're happier now.
Oh, 100%.
You know, it's not, I don't know. I don't know why some people think it's all about the money. Like, I just, my business is successful, and I'm gracious and lucky enough to be able to either put it in my bank and invest or give it back. I choose to give it back because I don't have a lot of means. I just like certain things nice, but I really don't care about the rest. But I just think that's right. I think that's great advice. Just find out your potential. You're not going to hit 50 home runs. Maybe you're going to, you know, be a school teacher, help somebody. You're not going to, you know, maybe you work from like some McDonald's when you're young. And I've learned this through businesses, you know, you work at McDonald's, you work the drive through, you stay there, you're 22, 23, 24, they're going to be more inclined to help you get a McDonald's. That's one thing about McDonald's Corporation is they will help you. They will have you work, you know, they'll finance you and work with you. That's to me is like, doesn't matter what you do, it's where you end up.
Yeah.
Whether you have a heck of a lot of money or a little money, or you end up, you're still living paycheck to paycheck, it's how you feel at that time. If you look around, again, I learn everything from watching people. Sometimes I see the most happiest people have the lesser means. Like they don't have, and it's like what they don't know, right? You go to third world islands and people are so happy and they love where they live and they don't have air conditioning or TV, and they don't know what the other side is. Is their life better because they don't know? You know, are they happier? I don't know. I try to like look at that perspective and like, man, it seemed like they're a lot happier. Now, would they want other things? Of course. But when you don't have something and you don't miss it and you don't know about it, like basically what you're saying is find your potential and just be happy with it. Try not to be something you're not. But that doesn't mean anybody can't be successful. If you find what you're good at, I mean, that I found what I was good at. I don't know where I'd be right now. I know I'd work hard, but I don't, you know, I just found out something I loved and I was good at.
Yeah.
And I wasn't making any money at the time. And, you know, you put in a lot of years, but you stay with it. So,
I think I'm a very growth-minded person. I love learning.
Mm-hmm.
And if there's something that I really enjoy doing, like if I want to spend all my time doing this, then that to me, like there's a balance between time freedom and financial freedom, right? If you have all the money in the world, but you're too busy or too out of shape to play with your kids, you're not really winning, right? So then time freedom comes into it, where I always say, like, it's not that I don't work. I work a lot, but I have time freedom because when I am working, I'm usually working on stuff I really enjoy. Mm-hmm. And that's a part of my life. Like it's who I am. It's what I love to do. So it doesn't really feel like work. Right. And then I have freedom to add a lot of other stuff that's really fulfilling in my life into my schedule, like this, for example. Mm-hmm. But it reminds me of and we can kind of end on this, but, there's a parable of the Harvard MBA and the Mexican fisherman, where the Harvard MBA graduates with the business degree, and before they start their career, they go down to Mexico, and he's doing this fishing trip, and he doesn't catch anything, and he sees this Mexican fisherman coming back, and the fisherman's got all these fish, and he said, well, geez, like, how long have you been out there? He's like, oh, just a couple hours, you know, I don't fish very long each day, I catch enough that I need, make my money. And he says, well, what do you do with the rest of the day? You know, he's like, well, you know, I'll go home and I'll have lunch with my wife, and then we'll plan on going to the neighbors and we play guitar and, you know, we'll sing for a couple hours, and then I'll get a good night's sleep and I'll wake up and I'll do it again tomorrow. And the Harvard MBA says, well, you're crazy. Like you could be spending a little bit more time out there. You make a little bit more money. Eventually you could, you know, so the Mexican fisherman keeps asking, like, well, what next? You know? And he gets to the point where he says, well, you know, at this point, like, you could have ships and you could have all these people working for you, and you could, you know, sell your company and have an IPO, put it on the stock market, and you'll become a millionaire. And the fisherman says, well, then what? Like, what do I do once I'm a millionaire? And he said, you can do whatever you want. Like, go have lunch with your wife, go to the neighbors and play music with your friends, you know? And the whole point was he's doing all of that now, right? Like, he's actually, he loves fishing and he does it a little bit each day. He loves the social connection. So he's with the neighbors. He loves playing music, so he's playing his music. So his whole life is built around the things that he actually loves, and he has enough that like he doesn't have to worry about. I think if you have enough where you don't have to really worry about, where the food's going to come from and stuff like that, then you have the luxury that a lot of people don't have to say, like, let me figure out the pieces of my life that I want to put in place in the right way and design it in a way where you can actually live a rewarding life. If you chase making millions for 30 years, you might miss out on a little bit of that. But again, like no one was talking to me about this kind of stuff, right? I was 30 and I checked all the boxes that society told me I should have checked, and I felt really unhappy and unfulfilled and out of shape mentally, physically, and everything. And I kind of felt like a broken person. So I was making all the money then, but it just wasn't right. But before we end, where can people find you?
Well, I'm only on one social media because I'm not techie savvy and I don't like social media. But I'm on LinkedIn. I post a lot, not all about business. A lot of it's about the personal stuff and charities and or mental health. So I'm on there, and eventually I'll grow just like you will with your business, and things will get better, and I'll grow in what I want to do here. Passion. If you have passion, you're going to grow, and you're going to grow at what your limits are. And what you said, just to touch on, is that just be happy with yourself. Don't judge yourself by other people, because you're never going to live up to that person you want to live up to. Live up to what you are, what makes you happy. But that's what I'm on LinkedIn right now. So that's it. I'm not big. I still do actively with advertising my company, and it's going to be we're marketing. We have our own marketing team, and we're growing that leaps and bounds, and we'll be doing a lot more stuff out of our office, to where we're not just furniture. I try not to always. It's not all about furniture, so.
Yeah, I know that you do a lot of events, like you mentioned, like you did the a couple of things down on the rocks. There wasn't a lot of media coverage around that. Do you have something that people can sign up to that like lets them know about events in the year? I know that that's actually hard to have in place. Do you guys have something like that from a marketing perspective that?
This year we will. You
Okay.
know, you grow as you go, and you learn as you go, and we're going to get out there more about, things of that nature. I know one thing. What I do is I remember good, bad, or indifferent. And like anytime the media wants to ask me something about business or something I'm involved with, I tell them, no, you didn't have time for me. I don't have time for you. Like it's one of those things. We had a McKees Rocks night at the stadium. Like no one had a McKees Rocks. No one has Braddock night. No one had, we did. And I just asked to cover it for the people. Like let everyone know there's good people there. It wasn't good enough. So maybe next time we'll have a shooting there and they'll be there anyhow. Jokingly. But my point again is we're gonna grow with this. Like you're gonna grow like I grew with my company. It's I always walk before or crawl before I walk, and I don't ever wanna make like that mistake where I should have said, oh, I should have just waited. So this year is bigger than next year podcast and other things that we're developing right now for the future of putting money back into certain areas. So.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I mean, just to bring it full circle, this is the stuff that I love. I just love, I had Brock Hanna on the show, and he said this. He just wants to work with like cool people that are doing cool things, and you see what kind of platforms you can build and what kind of impact you can have. That's just a lot of fun. I do this stuff, these races on the side, and it's probably one of the funnest things about this whole avenue for me that I never even thought about. It's just all about making relationships and finding people that you can work with to do some really cool stuff, and then just putting yourself out there in the world to see who you can help and where.
Reach to the good people, stay away from the bad ones, and you'll know who they are. In every walk of life, that's what I say. So good people are—they're always going to be successful, whatever you do, whatever success is to somebody, if you're around good people.
Yeah. Well, you're a great person, and
you are as well.
I,
thank you, Chad.
Yeah, thank you. I'm very humbled that I even get the opportunity to have people like you on the show. Like, honestly, I mean, if I think about like, when I started my journey, and I say things like, well, you're gonna be able to have this conversation with this person, and you're gonna be talk like that's the stuff that excites me.
But that's gonna be you. eventually one day, and not that it isn't now, but this is how you build up. You know, people want to believe in you, and when they do, then they want to know more about you. And that's where you're heading that way. Not to say, again, not you're now, but I'm 29 years probably older than you, so I've had a lot of things to learn over those 29 years. Yeah. So,
well, I think what you just said is pretty powerful. When people start to believe in you, that can have a transformational effect. It seems like it had on your life, and I know that you're doing that now in countless ways with countless people. So this was awesome. I want to have you back on at some point. When the book's out for sure, we'll get you back. We'll talk all about that.
I definitely appreciate this. I love it. It was a great time. Thank you.
Awesome, man. Thank you. All right, let's wrap it up.